You're listening to Robert Wright's Non-Zero Podcast.
Hello, Paul.
Hello, Bob. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Let me introduce this. I'm Robert Wright, publisher of the Non-Zero Newsletter. This is the Non-Zero Podcast, to which people should subscribe and rate and review and so on. You are Paul Bloom. One of the world's most famous, I would say, worthwhile Canadian psychologists and also author, man of letters, bon vivant.
Renaissance man.
I wouldn't go that far, but no. Publisher of what is certainly the world's most famous newsletter titled Small Potatoes. Whoever's in second place is way below you on the totem pole there, Paul. But I digress. Because I can tell by looking at your face that this is a source of discomfort for you. So I'm going to change the subject.
Since when do you stop when something's a source of discomfort for me?
Well, you're right. The truth is, I didn't see enough discomfort, so I'm changing the subject. So I thought of you this morning, Paul.
Oh, go ahead.
Partly because I knew I was going to record this, but also, so I thought, you know, I was reflecting on the news and things we could talk about. One thing I thought is, you know, it seems like the past week, the appreciation of how corrupt Donald Trump is has kind of coalesced. There's been a lot of stories about the many dimensions along which he is corrupt. And then I thought about the fact that I'm going to record with you. And I thought, wait, Paul's Canadian. Can he even relate to corruption? Does he know what the word means? And then I thought, Paul, wait, how did I come to think that Canadians are people of sterling character who are uncorruptible, who have possibly never heard of the word? And then I realized maybe it started with an encounter I had in the realm of popular culture many decades ago. So the quiz for you, Paul Bloom, is can you think of a figure who is Canadian in American popular culture, let's say 5 decades ago or more?
Ooh.
And was of sterling character.
Smokey the Bear Canadian.
No, I don't think so. But you're in the right. No, you're very much along the right. You're very much in the ballpark. Think cartoons, Paul.
Dudley Do-Right.
You nailed it. That is so good. Dudley Do-Right. For you younger folks, Dudley Do-Right.
much younger.
much younger. Was featured in the Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoon, right? I mean, he was separate. I think he was his own cartoon. He was a member of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, a man of considerable probity and also of comic stupidity, as I recall.
Hey, well, okay, go on. I think you're right.
Were you going to say something cynical?
No, I wasn't.
Like all people of probity are stupid? No, were you going to say that?
No.
That wouldn't be very Canadian, would it?
You're coming in hot today.
So anyway, yeah, and his arch rival was a villain with the memorable name Snidely Whiplash.
Right.
Presumably American.
No doubt.
Then I thought, so maybe Canadians actually aren't people of sterling character. This is just all this memory from this one cartoon. So I turned to you, Paul, for the truth. What is the truth?
I haven't followed Canadian politics tremendously tightly while living in the States. And now, you know, now I'm back in Canada. But we do get scandals of a sort. Mm-hmm. But it's always like Trudeau's finance minister, you know, maybe flew first class when she should have flown business class.
It's yeah, always, exactly.
It's small fry like that, as opposed to, you know, your president, you know, has a dinner for everybody who buys crypto and they get to spend for like $1 billion. They get to spend an hour talking to him. I'm exaggerating the numbers, but
it was $1 million and apparently only spent 20 minutes there. But one of them, either one of them or the son of one of them, then got a pardon. But this woman, his mother, the guy got pardoned. His mother had invested a lot of money in Trump over the years, political contributions, so on. And I think bought a bunch of the crypto. And, you know, I realized or learned, like, one way this works is these coins that are like Trump coins or Melania coins. So first of all, they get a bunch of them at the ground level. So then when the volume, you know, the price soars, they make money. But they also make money on every transaction. Did you realize that? Like, volatility is just a cash cow for them.
So Bob, I feel like I don't normally play the rube in this in our interactions. I've been in the States a long time. I feel I know a lot about politics and everything. Yeah. But I will do so now. Isn't this stuff illegal? Isn't this stuff the sort of thing which one can get impeached for if it doesn't break the law? So how come, you know, I saw this little clip of one of Trump's kids saying they gave us such a hard time in our first term for being corrupt. So what the hell? They're going to give us a hard time no matter what. So let's just max it out. It's under laws against this, rules, regulations, customs.
Well, first of all, the Supreme Court has since ruled, since his first term, that a president cannot be prosecuted for a felony committed in office.
Yes.
So long as it's,
part of their job.
Yeah, but that's a pretty broad definition. So anyway, that no doubt made him feel more comfortable about this stuff. But also, I mean, although he is making a ton more money out of this than somebody who flies first class on the government dime, he does a lot of it in ways that are just, it's not as straightforward as Senator Menendez, for example. Like, they went in his house and found actual gold bars, were handed to him. And there was no good explanation for how they got handed to him. Whereas Trump, like, for example, here's one of his favorite things these days is to sue a media organization. And it's a lawsuit he would almost surely lose because in America, if you're a public figure, it's very hard to win a libel suit. And so the media organization, whereas normally they would take it to court to establish you can't do this with him. They just happily hand him like $15 million, $25 million. So ABC shoveled a ton of money in his pockets that way. Yep. Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook gave him $25 million that way by settling a suit that Trump probably would have lost. Now, Paramount, which owns CBS, has offered Trump $15 million to settle, and he says that's not enough. And meanwhile, it works two ways. Like, the suits themselves are a signal that they have to tone down the criticism of him in the media organization, CBS in the case of Paramount, ABC, whoever. But anyway, the point is, and plus he gets the money. And there have been reports of journalists being told to keep things, to tone it down. And in fact, CBS News has had two resignations.
Yep.
By people who, I guess, refused to play ball, although they failed to speak out publicly in the way I wish they had. So, you know, that's... Oh, and by the way, Jeff Bezos decided that he should give Melania, what, $20 million or $25 million or something? So that Amazon Video can make a documentary about her or something? So, and he owns the Washington Post.
Yeah.
So, anyway, the point is, like, I guess, strictly speaking, this is all legal. And then there's other, and like Eric, as Trump is pondering what tariffs to finally impose on Vietnam, Eric, coincidentally, is in Vietnam, getting the government to give crash approval to this resort thing that's going to, take the land of lots of farmers and destroy cemeteries where their ancestors are buried and stuff, and they'll get less than market value for the property. So there are just so many dimensions of the corruption, and yet I guess it's hard to establish that any of it is illegal. I don't know.
You know, there was an ethos a while back where one avoids even the appearance of a conflict of corruption.
I remember that term.
And I think now there is the appearance. You can imagine an alternative world where Trump and his family be shamed not to do some sort of Vietnamese business deal while Trump is in charge of handling a decision that will affect the Vietnamese government. Where they decide, no, maybe it's actually wrong to have a meme coin to make money for the president, where he then agrees to meet with people who buy a lot of his garbage.
Meme coin. Yeah.
Yeah. Dudley do right. He is not. Just to wrap it around here.
I think we've got our title for today's conversation.
Yeah.
Dudley do right. Trump is not.
Since we always talk about Trump and Elon, we'll just move to the next, which is Elon Musk has apparently had enough. Doge has been such a tremendous success that he is leaving triumphant. No, that's not really true. He is just leaving. He is leaving. He is criticizing the Republicans' budget and pointing out that that any money that Doge has saved, which is far less clear than the estimates of how many people they killed by canceling various foreign aid programs. But anyway, it's all canceled out by the excess spending of the budget. And Elon Musk is going home. This, by the way, is a refutation for a lot of people. And I was never one of these people who said it was going to end with a huge battle between Elon and Trump. They're ending amicably.
Yeah, and I don't know that it's ending. I mean, Elon, these countries that are vying for tariffs, some of them, including Vietnam, I think, is saying they will sign on to Starlink.
Yeah.
I guess just in the hopes that Elon will give him a little White House love and put his two cents in. I don't know. So that game still seems to be working. Now,
if you count all the money that he's lost through Tesla, the bad blood that he's accrued and the cost of Tesla, do you think on balance this Trumpian thing was a good idea or a bad idea for him? Purely financially.
It's funny. In terms of his kind of fading from the Trump spotlight, I mean, first of all, the actual resignation had to happen because he had some status as some limited government employee or something, some official status that made this a finite duration. And I think his time has expired. But the truth is, he kind of left the scene weeks ago for most purposes. It was not long after he blew, 18 million or more trying to win Supreme Court race in Wisconsin, and he lost
went on stage with a big cheese hat.
Oh, did he? I missed that.
Yeah, that was a good picture.
Did he do the Heil Hitler salute with the cheese? That would be a great picture.
Cheesy Hitler.
Cheese, say cheese and do the Heil Hitler salute. So
we should get AI video to do something like that.
I bet we can. That would be a good transition if you had tried out VO3, but you haven't, right?
I haven't. Google's amazing. Have you tried it?
I haven't. I've actually done created a total of one thing. I was on a conference call and we said, why don't we do a screen share and try this? But I aim to fool around with it more. But quickly on Musk, before we get to AI, and I know you have new insights into doomerism, which is good. He started, I mean, first of all, I read this week in terms of how bad it's been for Tesla that in April in Europe, EV sales year over year, total EV sales were up like 20% or something. Tesla EV sales were down like 49% or something in that market. In America, they've been barely down because I think increased sales in red America have largely compensated for decrease. And they were down these aren't April numbers, but the first, I think the quarterly numbers, they were only down net like 3, 4, or 5% or something. It's been horrible for him Tesla-wise, probably good Starlink-wise. But it's funny, I think at roughly the same time, Trump realized that Musk was not a political asset, and Musk started realizing that being in politics was very bad for Tesla. So I don't know, maybe it was, one of these amicable separations.
Seems amicable enough.
Mm-hmm. Although, the point you made, him criticizing the Republican budget bill, you could say, well, it's Congress's bill, and he's just saying, it should be more astringent and do less to contribute to the deficit. But Musk did say maybe a bill just can't be both big and beautiful. And of course, that's Trump's phrase. He named it the big, beautiful bill. So that is like that's a broadside, man.
That is, yeah.
Getting feisty.
Apparently, Musk has committed $100 million to give to Trump's campaign. And the New York Times article I read suggested some question as to whether he's going to pay up.
You mean the next campaign or what?
I guess so. I don't, maybe just for the midterms or something.
Yeah. Okay. That would be interesting if he decided not to throw in any money there. That would be non-trivial. But Trump would respect that. I mean, Trump actually signs contracts to pay people money. And then at the end, if they've done all the work, he doesn't make the last payment. That's like standard Trump procedure. So he would respect the hell out of that.
I'm renovating my house now. And I'm thinking, that'll save a lot of money.
Yeah, totally.
Never occurred to me.
And I'm sure there are no people in the construction business who would make you regret that you did that.
That's true.
You don't have to worry about that.
Don't want to mess with people deal with concrete.
Yeah.
I find this, the corruption stuff with Trump, terrible, but honestly, it's so low down on my list of the terrible things he does. I can make like a deal with bargain, which is if he stopped trying to destroy, you know, American universities, for instance, and other countries with his tariffs, let him be corrupt. Everybody should have to give him, you know, he should have to get $1 billion a year from all different companies because he's corrupt. Give him his corruption tax. Just stop making him destroy a lot of things of value.
It's amazing. It's just every day. I mean, so there's the university thing per se, and now it's like a Harvard fetish, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's become this weird thing.
I have a lot of friends at Yale, and I think they're very relieved not to be the target of Trump's hatred, but a little bit envious. You know, it used to be Harvard and Yale kind of neck to neck, and now it's, you know.
Yeah. No, Harvard's got the resistance vote for sure now. It's a little like the media thing I was saying in that it's kind of a twofer. I don't know, because he's working out whatever vendetta he has against Harvard, and it's working, I guess, politically to attack coastal elites. I don't know.
Yeah.
But also he is shaping acceptable speech on campus. That's a big part of the thing. I mean, in fact, the main justification is what they're letting is what? It's DEI and anti-Semitism. Are those, or am I missing something? Those are the two big rationales. And DEI is more of an administrative thing, I guess, than a speech thing. And, you know, anti-Semitism, if it's actual anti-Semitism, isn't just a speech thing. But a lot of the speech they want to discourage, I would say, is not anti-Semitism.
I think anti-Semitism is one of the reasons they give for beating up on Harvard and Columbia in particular. But I do not believe it for a moment. If it wasn't that, they would do something else. They'd focus more on DEI, or they focus. He's just targeting them. He feels it's yes, whatever animosities he has, it's always good to own the libs. There's a letter from the Trump administration to Harvard, you know, giving all these demands as they do, and one of them was, we want more viewpoint diversity. And, you know, you gotta give them a little credit, you know, diversity, you know, well, how do you like this diversity being thrust upon you?
Right. And then they named, in the same letter, they named all these groups that had to be disbanded.
Yeah.
And they all had the name Palestine in them, except there was one that didn't. But, The latest thing which affects universities is what they're going to go after a lot of foreign students. I mean, first of all, they said that Harvard, of course, has to quit taking foreign students and maybe send them packing. I don't know. But now there's a broader thing about Chinese students who either have a connection to the CCP. And by the way, in China, a lot of people belong to the CCP. Yeah. It's like the path to easier yeah. success in business and so on. It's not necessarily an ideological statement, but but in addition, I think just people in particular, quote, critical fields, which I guess means, I don't know, computer science, physics, if they're from China and are in these critical fields, we're going to, I don't know. Somebody was saying online that China probably will be, on balance, happy about this because a lot of talent's going to return to China.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Also, in the name of anti-Semitism, they're rejecting all of, I think a judge has stopped it, trying to reject all the foreign students from Harvard. Many of the foreign students happen to be Israeli.
Is that right?
Yeah. So, you know, we had a lot of Israelis go to Harvard.
Self-haters. They found a lot of self-haters at Harvard.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so, yeah, it's, you know, it's funny. You almost have to talk about the whole thing in a lighthearted spirit, but it's so depressing. And, I mean, any one of the things he's done on the corruption front would have derailed a presidency 40 years ago. And corruption is like, it's like 1/8 of the problem. I mean, it's just, there are whole other realms. Yep. Oh, well.
Steven Pinker has a good op-ed piece about Harvard in the Times.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he talks about different aspects of the Trump thing. And one of the things he has, this is my memory, but I think it's correct. He had a student go through, and you know, Steve is, you know, a heterodox thinker and critical of the university's emphasis on DEI and some of the aspects of the sort of more repressive repressive acts of motivated by kind of a woke attitude. But Steve had some student go through the courses, all the courses that Harvard had to offer, and looking for what courses are plainly political of a sort. You showed it to somebody who was even, you know, Republican or whatever, and say, oh my God, that's so ideologically based, you know. Yeah, I got course makeup title, like course like, you know, like you know, globalize the Intifada, a seminar, that sort of thing. You know, the 15 genders of teen girls or something like that. And that's just 3%. That, you know, the vast, vast majority of courses at Harvard are organic history, organic chemistry, history, that's actually a good title, organic chemistry, history of the British Empire, you know, perceptual systems in primates. They're just this sort of, and almost everything the university does is, it's a great university. There's serious scholarship and serious teaching. And you know, it's really, I think what the university, it's never going to happen, but the university should, in my fantasy, and all the great universities in the state should start punishing these administrators by not accepting their children. Because
you mean the administrators
of Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Stanford, NYU, and everything like that should right now the children of Trump's children, his grandchildren, everything, where do they go? Well, they don't go to the University of Austin. They go to the great universities. They go to you know, they go to Harvard, and they get in because of the sort of celebrity and the power of presidents. And I'm in some ways sort of reveal preferences. If these Republicans, if these Trump people really believed these universities were terrible, mind control, ideologically homogeneous, awful places to get an education, why do they want to keep sending their kids there?
There you go.
So,
you got them.
I got them. I found
just send them a letter pointing out that paradox, and I think the tide will start to shift.
It's subtle, but it's just this little thing. Back in the day when Twitter was more, I could have put this on a tweet and this would just shift things.
It would have done well on Twitter back when Twitter was a place.
Did you, by the way, listen to J.D. Vance talk to your pal Ross?
I did. And I've already done a diatribe, but if you'd like the condensed version of it.
Yeah, I think the condensed version.
I think maybe I did it behind a paywall, so I'll do the full version. A couple of interesting things. One was he was sounding a more cautionary note about AI than he sounded at the Paris AI conference when he said, Too often we're too risk averse with technologies. Never have I seen a technology that so demanded the opposite approach, the opposite of too risk averse, which, by the way, Paul, is not risk averse enough. That's what he's...
That is what it means.
Anyway, now he had just talked to the Pope when he talked to Russ, and maybe that's one reason concerns about AI were on his mind. Maybe, as somebody suggested to me, he was catering to his audience. Anyway, he did sound a little more ambivalent. Yeah, there are these downsides, blah, blah, blah. The part that drove me crazy that Ross didn't press him on was when he said, you know, we just may have a conflict between the judicial branch and small d democracy. Yeah. And like, JD, here's the way it works, okay? All judges are either elected or appointed ultimately by someone who was elected or some body that was elected. They are part of small d democracy. And the way we work things out when there's a disagreement over what is and isn't consistent with the law or the Constitution is we turn to the judicial branch and we respect the ruling. And if that starts not happening, we're totally fucked as a country. Yeah. That's a constitutional crisis.
Yep.
And every time that happens, every time a judge rules, that is an expression of small d democracy, no more or less than when we have an asshole as president. That too is you know, that small d democracy at work. And I realized when I heard that, I mean, I've long thought this, that in some ways he's a more dangerous demagogue than Trump. I mean, what he's doing is planting the seeds for possibly some future actual resistance of an important court ruling, you know, like they're anti-democracy. And it's just like, not true. And was more sophisticated than the way Trump would put it. And that's what kind of alarmed me. So that's my total take on the interview. What did you think?
Similar things. First thing, Vance ended up saying some of the sensible things about AI and AI companions. He said things sensible, meaning that I agreed with them. He talked about their entrancing power, how you know, young people might be seduced into hanging out their AI companions all the time and not dealing with real people. Real concerns. I feel Vance is, in a sort of conventional sense, a really smart guy. He knows a lot. He's intelligent. He has had a superb education. He reads. You see that he reads the same things that you and I read. I'm pretty sure he reads Scott Alexander's, Substack and
I wouldn't call myself a regular reader of that, but I check in every once in a while.
And he does too. About his legal thing.
It's less surprising with him. I mean, there's definitely, you know, there's definitely very much an anti-woke vibe in the whole rationalist crowd, but go ahead.
I think the legal thing, you're right. I think he knows what he's doing. He's basically, he and the Trump administration is sending off messages to judges, including the Supreme Court, saying, look, you push back on us too much, and one day we're not going to listen to you, and you're not going to like that, and that's going to throw the country into deep chaos. So, you know, play it a bit safer. Don't push back on us too much, or else, you know, the whole world's going to go to shit, and it'll be your fault. And so there's a threat. There was a message to judges that's a threat, and I think some of them are going to listen. He also says something intentionally extremely funny, where he said, to Russ. Anyway, he said to him, you think my problem with names could be fixed with AI just kind of correcting them?
Anyway. First, you have to learn the way to pronounce the AI's name. So long as you call it Cloud, no, AI is not going to help you if you don't start showing ever the AI
you,
some respect.
Ever since you taught me, it rhymes with flawed. I got it wrong once. He said, you know, let me tell you two things about Donald Trump that you probably don't know, that the media doesn't talk about very much, that I've learned from hanging out with him. And so I'm leaning over, as it were, what's he going to say? And the first one is very believable, that Trump really knows people. He has a better sense of how people respond than anybody I've ever met. I could believe that. I think Trump has his strengths, and he's a demagogue and quite a successful demagogue, and he might know what buttons to push. And the second was, he's a deep humanitarian.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason why he wants to expel violent criminals to El Salvador is because this will make the prisons safer for everybody else. And I can't believe he expects us to believe that like they're shoving in and saying, you know, prison, you know, violence in prison is terrible, terrible thing. This we have to work on addressing. Like, who believes this anyway?
Yeah. Well, I mean, even his praise of Trump's reading the room ability was so extravagant. Yes. I forget what he said. He said, it's superhuman. It was something crazy. And, you know, look, Trump's pretty good at reading a room. I don't think he's compared to Musk, he's a wizard, but I think mainly he's just willing to go anywhere. He just has, you know, it's like, I know you don't have to be a genius to know that if you start saying to one ethnic group, the people in this ethnic group are raping your women, that will have an emotional effect. It's just that most of us wouldn't do that, you know?
Yeah.
That's the main thing about Trump is he just has no moral or ethical standards whatsoever.
And I don't know if there's a future where Vance runs for president, I don't know how well he'll do. But I think he lacks the extraordinary gifts that Trump has. He's just a normal, Vance is kind of a normal politician who will bend himself to whatever thing, he'll try to make arguments. He's not terrible. I don't think he's as awkward as he gets portrayed on Twitter and so on. But he's no Trump. He's no Obama.
Well, he's in a way he's closer to being an Obama. I mean, he would do well in a debate in a conventional sense, whereas Trump didn't. And that's what freaked everybody out in the Democratic Party. He's like, wait a second, why do people like this? He's saying stupid shit.
Yeah.
But no, he was pushing the right buttons. And in a way, his saying stuff no other politician would say was a feature, not a bug, because it meant he wasn't a regular politician. Vance, well, he will say things that aren't traditionally said, but you know, he would be a good debater in a conventional sense.
Yeah,
and there's some virtue in that, I guess. But Jackie, I think you're right.
He was a good debater with Tim Walz because, contrary to what some people expected, he went in kind of nice. It was just kind of, you know, normal, nice, good point, and I agree. We have a lot of overlap, you know, which was, I think, clever from a strategic point of view. It went well. It got over some bad press that Vance had.
Yeah. So America's screwed. But at least, Paul, AI is not going to take over the planet and destroy us, right?
So funny you should mention this. I was at a festival in Wales called How the Light Gets In, which was tons of fun. And I gave a talk. I participated in some debates. But what I bring to you from this festival was a debate which had present, and I'm not going to say his name because I don't want to single him out, but he's a charming, funny guy, that had a computer scientist who was very much of a doomer. And he regaled the crowd with stories how, said there's a 99% chance in the next 10 years AI will kill us all. He talked about how gets access to the internet, uses Bitcoin to get people to create a global pandemic, but in all sorts of ways could kill us all. And it reminded me of something. And I don't have a little bit of history. When I was a youth, a teenager in Laval, city adjacent to Montreal, the conservative shul that I went to fell apart for various reasons.
This is a synagogue, right?
Yes.
Synagogue. Now, does shul mean exactly the same as synagogue, or?
Okay. I think so. I've always used them synonymous. You know, like yarmulke and kippah. Boy, a lot of Jewish content today. This is good. Anyway, so it was replaced with a Lubavitch rabbi, and the Lubavitch is
now that
is,
you we maybe need a little explainer there too.
They are a group within Judaism that's messianic, that at the time believed that Rebbe Schneerson, who lived in Crown Heights, Brooklyn, was the Messiah, and that his presence heralded the incoming end of the world. So I would see the rabbi, who was this young guy, very young, I think mid-20s at the time, came from Australia, sent, you know, perfectly charming guy, went over to his house, was a fun guy to talk to, and he believed the world was going to end. And what I, at the time, what I wish I asked him was, Are you saving for your kids' college education? What kind of mortgage do you have? You borrow money? You're like, you know, because if I thought the world was going to end, I'd behave very differently. You see where this is going.
Yeah, it's going to Tyler Cowen land. Tyler always says, if you really think we're screwed, why don't you short the stock market? But this guy put it better, because like a lot of people just don't play the market that way. Whereas people do invest, do save money for their kids' education. So I prefer this version.
Right. So right now I have retirement funds and I put in a bit extra because the money from this, from our regular conversation, not going to last forever. And at a certain point when I get old, but suppose I believe the world was going to end in 10 years to a near certainty, I wouldn't put in extra money for retirement. I would do things quite differently. I would also, by the way, not be so fucking cheerful all the time. Like it's some great joke that I'm going to die and everybody I love is going to die. Ha ha, this is great. I would be kind of bereft. I would be fighting like hell to stop this terrible fate.
But didn't we just say, although one way to spell doom is T-R-U-M-P, the way we're adapting to Trump is to like joke about it? Isn't that what people do?
Yeah, but we don't really think, at least I don't think that Trump's going to kill us all. I think it's sort of like, I think that quote, anyways, I go up to this doomer guy afterwards and I say, so I was less polite. I never asked a rabbi because I was too polite. You don't want to be rude to a rabbi. Don't get started on this other rabbi I have this feud with. But I am small potatoes rabbi. So how does this affect your interaction with your kids, how you save and everything? And he kind of like, oh, I don't know. And he didn't want to talk about it. And so here's what I'm going to throw out here. Unless doomers, and maybe Tyler Cowen got here first with this idea, unless doomers are really adjusting their life in a really significant ways, they don't really believe it. I don't think they're lying. I don't think they're doing this for the clicks, for fame. I think what they've been persuaded by is a sort of abstract arguments leading to certain conclusions. But for better or worse, and I'm not sure what to make of this, they don't believe it in their gut, because if they believed it, they would live their lives very differently. Is that persuasive?
It's a good question. I mean, it has to do with the nature of belief.
It does.
And with coping mechanisms. I mean, and how people with terminal illnesses respond and a lot of things. I will say, look, I think it is kind of human nature to spend a certain amount of your life in denial of things.
Yeah.
So the truth is, if we all took really seriously the fact that we're going to die, we'd maybe be, I don't know, that might affect us, especially as you get older. And yet, you really don't, take it serious. I don't know. It would also depend. I mean, on, first of all, if they're leaving out a 1% chance.
That's right. And that's what the guy said. The guy said, well, I said, so why are you safe for retirement? And I said, well, 1%. He said, maybe the AIs will keep us around for like 100 years, building new things, and then wipe us out.
Right. I'm dying to know who this was. Is this somebody I would have heard of?
I'm not sure.
Probably. So that means it wasn't Doomer in Chief. It wasn't Eliezer.
No. By the way, I've seen Eliezer like talk. He seems genuinely upset. He seems...
Oh, he's serious.
You know, it's as an analogy. Some colleagues of mine at Yale have decamped to University of Toronto because they feel Trump is going to turn the country into a fascist dictatorship where academics like them will be rounded up and shot. Now, say what you will about this belief, which seems to me to be somewhat overblown. That's if you believe it, that's a perfectly rational response to leave the country. That makes sense.
Yeah.
What seems to be idiotic is somebody will tell you, oh, Trump's going to take all the academics and line them up against the wall and have them shot. Yeah, I'm just hanging around here waiting for this to happen. Well, it's crazy. If you believe it, you act some way. You know, if you think climate change is going to wipe out the coastal cities, you don't buy a brownstone in Brooklyn.
No. Yeah. No, it's true. But I mean, honestly, like, you could almost say if you actually have my beliefs, which increasingly is that we're just totally screwed. I should be what? Like not even bothering to try to convince people of what I think the right thing to do is. I mean, because it's looking dark. I mean, if you hold my if you have my assumptions, yeah. I mean, including about what AI calls for, you know, I just think, you know, China phobia is going to ensure that AI doesn't go well. And it's rampant and doesn't show any signs of reversal. So I don't know. Well, is it almost overtime time, or were we going to talk about
overtime time?
Probably is. Yeah. What are we going to talk about in overtime?
Well,
there's another Canada Trump connection we could talk about, the Golden Dome.
Golden Dome.
Now, should that be overtime fair, or?
I don't think there's much to say. Trump said Canada has two choices. They could either give us some, I don't know, $17 billion or whatever amount of money to be under our gold, the great protection of our beautiful country, because he talks like that.
I've got the quote, Paul.
Go ahead.
Quote, I think this was on social media. I told Canada, which very much wants to be part. By the way, Golden Dome is a missile defense system. Yes. It's it reminds some of us of Ronald Reagan's Strategic Defense Initiative. And it's like such a horrible idea. And it's another reason to be depressed. You know, weaponizing space is a bad idea. But mainly it's just such a sad testament on humankind that this is the way, you know, we can't even like agree with other nations. Like, okay, we just won't have a nuclear war, okay? And so we don't have to have this arms race in space ostensibly to protect us against nuclear annihilation, which, by the way, is destabilizing, which was established in the 70s, that to have a missile defense system is actually makes nuclear war more likely, hence the anti-ballistic missile treaty, which, of course, George W. Bush in his infinite wisdom tore up. Okay. Anyway, here's a Trump quote. I told Canada, which very much wants to be part of our fabulous Golden Dome system, needless to say, Paul, Golden Dome system is capitalized, that it will cost $61 billion, capitalized, if they remain a separate but unequal nation, capitalized, but will cost $0, all caps, all letters caps, will cost $0 if they become our cherished 51st state. And then he adds, they are considering the offer. Hey, Donald, they're actually not, that's okay?
It's not a popular offer.
But does he think they are? What does he think? I mean, okay, maybe Carney politely said, we'll think about it or something. No, Carney, who knows?
At least in the public discussions, Carney really said never. And he said, this really is very explicit by that, because it's not a viable option. And I don't know. I got a sort of error thing on my, on this. We're using.
That's okay. We're recording on Zencastr. Paul has an error, but it's okay because what I say is much more important than what Paul says. So
I'm just going to blip out. You're just going to do the record your half. That's fine. Anyway, I forget where I was, but I'm now wondering whether this is just now one of Trump's riffs, and he's lost sort of an enthusiasm about actually having a ground invasion of our beautiful country. And now it's like his Hannibal Lecter thing, which is kind of a little comic thing, 51st state, you know, calling.
I mean, what does he think he's getting out of it? Are there swing voters who are going to be, I mean, what, why? I don't
get it. I saw a clip from him. I'm going to say something positive about him. I saw a clip from him in a press conference where he was asked, I forget the details, but he was asked whether he was like a chicken for having his high tariffs and dropping them in response to things. And his response was this long-winded response. But his response was basically, how I work is I say really scary things to people, and impossible demands and terrifying threats. And then they concede, and then we say scale down a bit. And that's how it works. And maybe part of this threat to Canada is meant for the Canadians and Canadian government to get concessions from us. because he says, fine, I won't invade you and kill all your people. You know, so just give us more, you know, mineral rights, more energy, more oil, whatever.
Well, he may think that being under the Golden Dome is a common aspiration in Canada, which, who knows?
I haven't heard of the Golden Dome until like 3 days
ago. It sounds great, right? Gold? It's going to be golden.
It'd probably be literally made of it. It's kind of like the wall.
Oh, I think so. I think, look, if people in the Pentagon had said, listen, Mr. President, I'm afraid that all the components of the dome are actually made of stainless steel, he would have said, no way. No, I want a golden dome.
Trump likes his gold.
So I have a little more to say about all that. And wait, was there some response hanging in the air? Was I supposed to respond?
No, you responded everything.
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 And also, in overtime, we're going to talk about Paul's piece in the Small Potatoes newsletter, at least one of the Small Potatoes newsletters. Yeah. It's called Why Are So Few Professors Troublemakers?
Yeah.
And also going to talk about some, I saw a great documentary from way back that I'm going to recommend. Paul is constantly watching trashy video, and we'll be happy to share some of that with us.
I could talk about The Last of Us, Hacks, Murderbot, The Rehearsal, Friends and Neighbors. These are old shows.
Is that Prestige TV? What is it?
It's old Prestige, TV. It's all on streaming services and everything. And we talk. Also, I'm going to see the Mission Impossible movie tomorrow. So we'll have to wait.
Congratulations. Tell me whether the stunt kills Tom Cruise. I'm on the edge of my seat. He did his own stunt, apparently, right?
Really? Yes, yes.
That's gotten some publicity, right? I mean, this is why they call him stuntman, because this was a publicity stunt, right?
Oh.
It's like, that's why they call him stuntman.
If we could make clips from our show, just use them for advertising, that's one we would choose.
See, people think that I had like an AI write that line out in advance. It's so good. Wrong. This noggin, folks? It's organic.
Okay, so
we're going to overtime. If you are a subscriber to either of our newsletters, paid subscriber, you get to partake in overtime. We encourage it, and we're going in overtime.